So how many people were in the previous two presentations about JavaScript? Okay, that's a good mix. That's good. So this presentation, I won't show much coding anymore. Now I'll talk about big picture lessons learned. So what I'm going to talk about here is a very open, honest conversation, developer point of view, right? No marketing, sales, nothing like that. It's really about, after spending 1 year and a half building line of business applications for Windows 8 and trying to figure out all the little challenges and tricks and everything, we summarize a bunch of lessons that we think other people should have, and we talk a lot about this. We talk about this internally. We've been talking about this externally as well. So to make it very clear, I'm not from the Windows product team. I'm from a group in Microsoft, Microsoft IT, right? We have an internal IT department. We build applications. So everything I'm talking about here is from real world experiences, nothing to do with formal speeches on Windows 8. So you notice very quickly that this is a developer's point of view, trying to get these things working and what works, what doesn't work. So pretty much I'll talk about some of the things we've been building, some proof of concept applications, some ideas we had, and what we've learned about it. So more than 1 year ago, my boss, he's the chief software architect of Microsoft IT. So he said, look, Windows 8 is coming, and I have a feeling that's going to shake things a little bit because it's going to change how internally and how our customers and partners build applications in our environment. It's going to set a lot of rules that were not there before. It's going to change the APIs. It's going to bring new kind of hardware in place. So things are going to change big time. So I want you guys to start prototyping Windows 8 applications and learn how much you can actually learn about what works, what doesn't work, and start providing guidance, because other people, when they start doing this, they will need that kind of feedback. So that's what we've been trying to do. And we do this by building proof of concept. So we say, well, let's imagine this scenario. Okay, let's try to build it. Let's see what happens, right? Did it work? Did we have problems? What we learned? So in terms of proof of concepts, I will show a couple of proof of concepts here. I want to make it super clear. Those things are not products. They will never be products. They're just crazy ideas we had, and we built it, and then we throw away. It's pretty much about learning. It's not about, so nothing you're going to see here is ever going to be a product anywhere. Not that I know. I hope not, right? So one of these ideas was what we call SharePoint Hub. So this one was kind of my little child, because I was very keen with this idea. I wanted to build a SharePoint client in Windows 8, and I wanted it to work in a specific way. At Microsoft, internally, we have more SharePoint sites than the universe has stars. We have a lot of SharePoint sites. And the problem is, it gets harder and harder to find what you want, right? So we invest a lot in searching capabilities that SharePoint has, fast search and everything, to allow that. And even then, there are new sites coming up every day. People create new sites. So to me, it's quite challenging. And I wanted to build something that I wanted to build a Windows 8 app where I could add my favorite SharePoint sites, right? And the first thing it would give me would be Windows 8 search integration. So I would bring the Windows 8 search charms and say, I want to search something. But I don't want to search across all the SharePoint sites that are out there. Just the ones I use, just my favorite ones. So this app would know how to go to these SharePoint services, right? And run this search and get the results and show it in a Windows 8 app that works well with touch, right? On a tablet, and so on. And also, I want to be able to search for people, right? SharePoint has this people catalog, right? I want to be able to search for people there. And if I move the SharePoint to a snap view, I want it to work as a shortcut thing that I can actually drill down into SharePoint content and open it in IE in the right side, right? And actually navigate to SharePoint sites using this little shortcut bar as a snap view. And I want to be able to actually drill down into SharePoint content with the sidebar kind of concept, where you have the lists and the pages and the document, and navigate across documents and filter and open them and so on. So this was in very early stages of Windows 8, right? And we built it. And we started building this in XAML C Sharp. Was another case where at some point we realized, you know what? We would be better off building this in HTML JavaScript, and we did it in HTML JavaScript, because SharePoint is all about HTML, right? And if you're going to blend HTML that SharePoint gives to you with your UI, it's going to be better performance, going to be easier if you blend it in a HTML app instead of a XAML app. It's just easier. Then we built another app called Approvals. And Approvals is a typical line of business app. So it's all about approving requests, right? So it connects to Dynamics AX as the back end. And people send expense reports. They send whatever requests. And the manager opens this UI and gets to approve and reject things. It's a very, and that was the first experiment we did with Windows 8 ever. Like, we started from here. Like, we started building this thing. And we went through several iterations, right? So we started building the UI more or less like this. Then we felt, well, that's too simple, right? We could add a little bit more information. Some developer guy had the idea that if you use the black background, it would save more energy in your tablet, which later on realized was completely stupid because it really doesn't, that's not what makes a difference in your power usage. But anyway, we changed it to black. Then we started adding more tiles with different color codes for different things and a bit more information to the tiles, right? Then we added the people that report to your manager on the right, that we felt there was a little bit space there we could use, right? And then we decided that beyond the color codes, we added more color codes for different things and some icons for different situations as well. And then we felt like, well, maybe color codes are not enough. So we started putting watermarks in the back of the tiles as well. And then we've learned the whole black color thing didn't matter. So went back to white background. Then we started to realize, hang on, we're doing something wrong here, right? This is looking worse and worse every step of the process. What are we trying to do here? What's the point? And we quickly realized we're missing one very important element of Windows 8 apps, which is simplicity, right? We're building a desktop app all over again. It's ugly, right? And we started to roll back what we did, right? And we started simplifying it to something that was almost close to what we had initially with less tiles and a very simple UI. We started challenging ourselves to say, do we need to display all this information? Is it really adding so much value? Or are we just trying to fill spaces here in the screen because we're used to do that? We see empty spaces in the screen, we start putting stuff there because we feel it has to have something, right? And then realize, wow, there is way more than just a new framework here. There's way more than just a new technology here. This thing is telling us we have to start doing things different because the way we've been doing it so far, it's not working. And guess what? Building simple UIs takes a lot of work, right? Because building complexity is easy, right? You throw stuff on the screen, you keep throwing buttons and menus and grids and whatever. There you go. Now you have a complex UI, right? You didn't have to think about it. But to actually simplify things, you have to go through iterations and iterations and iterations to actually say, yeah, that's as simple as I can get without breaking anything, right? That's the minimum I need to show to my users to actually get them to work with my app. And that's quite different than, for me, was a huge learning exercise, right? Today I see UIs in a whole different way and changes how I look at websites, changes how I look at all sorts of user interfaces because I'm way more critic than I used to be with those, right? So we think there is this trend where we're moving from just apps, right? Facebook app, Windows Live app, blah, 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 Twitter app, to task-focused applications. I think Windows Phone does that quite well in some areas. So you have the People Hub, right? It's a mix of Twitter and Facebook and Outlook, and it's all about people, right? And what they're doing. And to me, it's more intuitive, and especially for users who are not very technical, they may not know very well what Twitter is. But if they have a Twitter account and they go to the People Hub, they can see what's going on, regardless of if it's going from Twitter or Facebook or whatever. So we have this impression that not only apps are becoming more and more popular, but they're becoming more task-centric. Why is it that in a typical IT environment, you have to know there is a system called blah, Dynamics AX, SAP, where I have to go to approve something? Why can't I have an application called Approvals? And I open it and I approve things. And I don't care where it goes. I shouldn't have to care where it goes. I don't have to know it goes to Dynamics AX. That's not my problem. I'm the user, right? You guys have to figure where stuff gets saved, right? So this whole Windows 8 development, Windows Phone development, started to challenge us in this space. We also think another trend that's becoming super clear is that mobile users prefer apps than web. Not all web. I think there is web that's built for mobile devices and works really well. And a great example is I was watching the keynote today, and one of the apps is a very good ASP.NET jQuery mobile on Windows Phone, but most of the web out there isn't really built for touch, isn't built for mobile devices. And what we're learning is that people are gravitating when they use mobile devices, they use tablets, they use phones, they gravitate towards apps. Just try to use Facebook web in your phone and then try to use the Facebook app in your phone, right? You just go to the web when there's something that your app doesn't do because otherwise you stay in the app, right? The experience in web, it doesn't feel right on the phone, right? So because of that, interesting things are happening. These are very recent news. And there's a lot of discussion going on the web. I suggest you to follow these and see what's going on. But basically, in just a few days, web traffic in Windows 8 has been catching up with Android and passing Android. And there's a lot of esoteric explanations about it involving the hurricane and whatever power outages and everything. I have a much simpler explanation. It's if you're going to do a lot of web stuff, you prefer a mouse and a keyboard. You prefer a desktop, right? It's just how long can you stay on a mobile device navigating around the web and clicking hyperlinks and everything and filling forms? There's a point where you say, that's it, right? I can't stay here anymore. Either give me an app or I will switch to the desktop. So this helps me to understand when I talk with customers about strategy and what they should be focusing at. I talk a lot about this. I talk about how's your website working today? Is it touch friendly? We do HTML5. That's not what I asked, right? HTML5, that's... Is it touch friendly? Does it work well on a mobile device? Does it work well with tablets? Did you test it? Oh, actually, no. So before we talk about apps, maybe you should be talking about your website and what you should be doing architecturally in terms of UI and everything to make it a better experience. Then we can talk about apps, right? So all these things are part of these lessons we've been collecting and hearing from our customers, hearing from internal developers, interesting things that we've been collecting and we've been sharing that I think is worth talking about. So I have a bunch of them here. I will just list them and discuss about each one of them. One of the top things a typical Windows developer asks when he switches to Windows 8 apps development: I can talk to SQL Server? Are you guys crazy? Right? I build a desktop application, I just connect to SQL Server, entity framework, blah, 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 run my SQL. You're telling me my Windows 8 app cannot just reach SQL Server directly? Well, yeah, right? And there are a few reasons why, right? So if I'm using my little mobile phone, I'm using my tablet, right? I use this stuff on the fly, right? I'm walking around and typing stuff here. Then I enter into the elevator. The elevator closes the door, and there goes my connection, right? What you're going to do, like lock a record in the SQL Server while you're entering the elevator, right? There are better approaches for this, right? And there are lots of technologies, OData, JSON, RESTful services. They are quite flexible. They allow you can easily have a service layer in front of your database. But that's not all. If you're publishing your app to a wider audience, remember, if I get your app, I can disassemble stuff. I can look at your binaries. I can decompile them. I can figure out all your database module, your SQL calls, right? Do you really want the end user there figuring out how your database looks like because all your SQL is there in the client app? This is it. I don't feel that's secure enough, right? And I would prefer to have a service layer between whatever that user has and whatever my data gets stored. So there are a few good reasons why we're saying, well, you know what? Put a service layer there. Right? Because there are a few good reasons. And it's not just us, right? Everybody moves towards this. So HTML has strengths. People, very often, development teams, they say, well, we're going to build this in JavaScript because we know JavaScript better. Or we're going to build this in C# because our guys are all C# guys. I think that's not good enough reason anymore. It's not about your comfort zone anymore, right? I think, especially in this area of work, we have to deal with new technologies every day. And you guys can speak 4 languages or something. If you tell me you cannot jump from C# to JavaScript, I won't believe you, seriously, right? It's not that simple. So, for example, when you talk about designers, if you're looking for a very good UI designer, what are the chances you're going to find a very good UI designer that knows a lot about HTML and CSS versus a designer that knows a lot about XAML, right? There's way, way more web designers out there, very good ones, right? So this is already a reason for me to consider, well, maybe if your focus would be a lot in the look and feel and how things look like, you may want to get a team of web designers work here. That's to me is one thing that highlights maybe HTML might be an option. But you also can mix HTML JavaScript with C#. So you still can write your plumbing in C# and HTML as your UI. So to me, that's the best of both worlds. I can still stick with C#, that's my favorite language, but I can do all the UI in HTML and JavaScript. This is not very different than web today, right? You guys write websites, there's a lot of HTML and JavaScript, there's a lot of C# or Java, whatever, in the back end. So makes sense to me that we go down this path in some cases. I'm not saying to build everything in HTML and JavaScript, I'll get there. So in my home country, we have this proverb, right? We say, a duck is a very interesting animal because it can fly, it can walk, it can swim, it does all these 3 things very badly. So, first thing that people try to do when they jump from Windows, traditional Windows development to Windows 8, They try to do exactly the same things they used to do in the Windows development. Same mistakes, same behaviors, same things. Guess what? It doesn't work. There are different constraints, there are different rules in place, there are things you should keep in mind, and above all, if you're going to build exactly the same look and feel, just build a desktop application. Don't even bother, right? Are you going to just copy and paste code to run a Windows 8 app? Don't, right? Because your application will look so strange compared to the others that what are you getting there, right? So you have to accept that if you're going down this path, things will change. Behavior changes, software development cycle changes, UI changes. Otherwise, just stay with desktop. Don't try to build a desktop app inside of a Windows 8 app. It's another interesting one. Happens a lot. People look at Windows 8 and say, oh, those UIs are so simple. I'll build UIs 10 times faster than I ever did before. Right? Windows 7 was complicated. Windows 8 is so easy. It's a simple UI. Well, first, you have to look at all these variations, right? So landscape, portrait, snap view, full view. Then you have to think about mouse and keyboard and touch, because you could be using a tablet, you could be using the desktop, in a laptop. All variations. Truth is, we're spending more time doing UI now than before. Right? Designing it, thinking about it, writing it, more time. And I think that's great. I think it's a great investment. Because I think we needed to improve our UIs. We Microsoft, we partners, we Windows developers, there was space for improvement there. I think now this improvement is happening. But it's investment, right? It takes time, it takes people, it takes a lot of thinking, right? So there are scenarios where there are constraints there that don't allow what you need to do in your app. Like you have a specific scenario, business requirements, technical requirements, and you try to build a Windows 8 app and it doesn't fit because there are constraints there that don't allow what you want to do. Guess what? Maybe what you really want to do is to build a desktop application, not a Windows 8 store application, and that's fine. Take Photoshop. I think Photoshop is essentially a mouse keyboard application. You can build a light version of Photoshop and make it all touch friendly, all nice. It's a toy, right? The real Photoshop, the real working Photoshop is a keyboard and a mouse thing with maybe a pencil and everything. It's not a touch kind of application. I still don't see how a single version would work so well in all the variations. So there are cases where, yes, you can have a single application that works in both ways. I think OneNote is an interesting example. There are cases where, no, it's not going to be exactly the same. And you have to know this, right? There are lots of rules. For example, how much background processing your application is allowed to do, right? I cannot build a database server, SQL Server, as a Windows 8 App Store. It needs a service, it needs a lot of prioritization in terms of threads and CPU and memory usage. I cannot write that with pure Windows 8 App Store code. So I build it as what it is, as a service, as a back-end service. So don't try too hard, because there might be cases where it just doesn't fit, right? And then you have to balance, well, but I wanted it to run on Windows RT. Well, then you have to consider what experience you want to provide in Windows RT, right? And what is not allowed there. Someone asked me about this today. JavaScript is evolving. When I first look at Windows 8, I say, well, I never touched JavaScript here. It makes no sense. Now I would say 80% of what I look at, I've been telling people, building JavaScript, you'll be better off in JavaScript. One big reason that stopped me of building JavaScript initially was there is nothing there. There's no compiler. Like if I type something wrong, Visual Studio just let it run. I will just figure out if something is broken by running it. I have zero refactoring tools. I cannot right click in a method and say rename this, right? I have to search and find and replace. That's terrible. Like a typical example of this that I can show to you guys, I think it will answer quite a few questions I've got earlier on. If I open Visual Studio, right, and where's my cursor? Here. And new project, let's do some JavaScript blank app, right? So imagine I say, well, I'll have a function called test, which receives a parameter. Then I say parameter, oops, dot, and what Visual Studio is doing here? It's pretty much guessing, right? How can you tell what parameter is, what data type would be? What if it's not just one data type? If I could call this function from two different places with two different data types. There is no way Visual Studio can figure this thing out. There is no artificial intelligence in this planet that can say, hey, yeah, I know what this is going to be. Right? Not even us, like you guys, no one can tell what this is. Right? So, what's happening? What's happening is there are alternatives. And one that I really like, and I think everybody should be looking at, is TypeScript. So TypeScript is a superset of JavaScript. So all JavaScript is TypeScript. Not all TypeScript is JavaScript. So what do? You get your JavaScript files and rename them to .ts. And now they're TypeScript. And then you add types to things. Oh, but JavaScript doesn't have types. Well, but this thing does. Right, so you say, oh, this is a string, this is a class, this is whatever, right? You can create classes and everything. Then when you compile it, it generates what? JavaScript back. So now your JavaScript is more or less your intermediate language in .NET, right? It's a semi-compiled kind of thing that's going to run. But now Visual Studio validated things for you, the data types. Now I have refactoring tools on top of it. I can rename things. So I feel far more comfortable now to have thousands and thousands of lines of codes in this thing because I know I won't get lost. If it was just JavaScript, it feels a little bit uncomfortable, right? So I strongly suggest people to look at this. If you have a lot of JavaScript, it's not just Windows 8, it's whatever you want. Consider this because it can make a big difference in your development. Embrace async, and this is hard. Like as a developer, asynchronous code is hard. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of testing. It takes more coding. It's difficult, but it's the right way to do a lot of things. And in Windows 8 and Windows Phone and Silverlight and JavaScript, there are places where there's no option. There's no way you can fight against it. That's the only option you have is asynchronous code. You have to deal with it. And the problem is, if you start writing code and say, oh, this method will be synchronous, and this one is going to be asynchronous, and this one is going to be synchronous, and that one is going to be asynchronous, guess what? After a while, one thing has to call the other, and then now you have synchronous methods calling your asynchronous methods, and you start having lots of problems. And then you have to refactor things and change things that were synchronous into asynchronous because you're trying to avoid what's inevitable. That's a lot of that thing will be asynchronous. So instead, I suggest find your patterns, find your standards, where asynchronous works naturally for you because it will be all over the place, whether you like it or not. And it's for a good reason, right? So that's life. We have to live with that. Reuse depends a lot of how you do stuff. Lots of people ask about it. I got lots of questions from you guys today about it. HTML and JavaScript. It depends a lot how you build it. If you start doing a lot of interop between JavaScript and C#, that's going to be Windows 8 only, because JavaScript doesn't call C# anywhere else, just Windows 8. If you do a lot of WinJS code, it's going to be Windows 8 only. But if you build something that's completely pure JavaScript and HTML that doesn't have any of those things, now you have a huge chance you can actually move these across web and Windows 8 and other platforms. And there are stories, mostly, especially on the game side. Game developers, they're very good with that. They have their little frameworks. They already build the whole experience and animations and everything. So for them, it's very easy to port over and actually move from Windows 8 to Windows Phone. It's very easy to do. So definitely consider that. Careful with, in terms of C#, careful with the way you do asynchronous. For example, if you are writing a library that runs everywhere, I think there will be a session after this that will talk more about porting C# code between Windows Phone and Windows 8. But in .NET, you used to do begin and end methods. So you had begin something, end something. So you had, it was the way you did asynchronous. Now you move into this await keyword syntax, right? Where you have something async, and you can use await keywords to synchronize it, to actually wait for that to finish. So focus on this new way of doing things, because more platforms support it. Windows 8 supports it. If you try to build Windows 8 apps using the old begin and end syntaxes, things won't work. So part of what people are doing now is migrating the old syntax to the new syntax, so it works on Windows 8, works on Windows Phone, and so on. So little tricks you have to consider if you want to make it run everywhere. Careful with method signatures. Not all data types in C# are supported in JavaScript. Not all things in C++ are supported in C#. So when you build libraries that are supposed to be used across different languages, you have to find a common minimum denominator there. And Visual Studio will help you, because it knows if you say, I'm creating a library for using from Windows 8 apps, it knows that the Windows 8 apps could be anything. It could be JavaScript, it could be C#. So it will warn you and say, well, you're doing something here that's not supported, right? You have to do differently. So it's kind of, it's actually very helpful in that way. Performance tests. Don't build apps on your Intel i7 machine with 64 gigs run and expect they will run exactly the same on a low-spec tablet. Remember to test in very low-spec machines, because people fail a lot in that area, right? I fail in that area a few times, right? I sit on my laptop, it's very powerful, i7, 16 gigs run, write my little thing, always works. Then one day I try on the Surface, different experience, different CPU, different amount of memory. Don't expect it to behave the same. And in some cases, you have to make your app smart enough to say, well, that's a low-spec machine. It should work differently. There are a few tricks you can do to actually figure out, this is taking too long. Maybe I shouldn't be doing this here, right? And make different decisions. Definitely invest more time in user experience. I think it's something that, for most people that came from the Windows environment, it's harder to deal with. Funny, because when we launched Windows Phone 7, I remember I spoke with a lot of iPhone developers and a lot of Windows Mobile developers. iPhone developers, they got it. They got it right away. Windows Phone 7, yes, framework, Visual Studio, yes, application certification rules. Yeah, no problem. Windows Mobile developers started crying and yelling, and this is wrong. Microsoft is telling me I'm not allowed to do this. Who Microsoft thinks they are? I used to be able to do anything I wanted in Windows Mobile, and now I cannot do these things because there are lots of rules, and now Microsoft gets to test my app. Why? Well, guess what? We need to provide an overall consistent experience that works across all these devices. And if my tablet starts to perform badly because there's one app that's using 100% of the CPU, that affects the overall experience with that tablet. That's our problem now. That's everybody's problem now. So it's a new kind of concept that for lots of people is very frustrating, right? But there are good reasons there. And one of the main points is, look at your user experience. look at what you're doing. Think about how the users will deal with that. This is going to be easy. It's going to be hard. Test with real users, right? Because we are different people, right? We think things different than the majority of people out there. So you have to test with the real people out there because they will do things you never imagined someone would do, right? And that's very good to actually learn a few important things. I mentioned this in the last presentation. Asynchronous is not multi-thread. And I'm getting a lot of problems because of that. Lots of people fail in this area. And they build the whole thing asynchronously. And they think, oh, yeah, my UI will be always fluid and everything. Because it doesn't matter how busy my code is. My UI always is free, right? It's not. It's single-threaded, right? If your application is too busy doing something, it doesn't matter if it's asynchronous or not. You're locking your UI. What you have to do there is actually do multi-thread code. And that's where C# takes an advantage against JavaScript. It does it better, right? And that's why I suggest people to look at this and to say, hey, you know what? You can build a JavaScript app with HTML, CSS, and you still use all this .NET, C#, C++ code in there if you want, right? And reuse this across XAML, C# and HTML and JavaScript. And I love it because when you build web applications, that's not so different than this, right? With web applications, you have web and you have backend. So why should it be different here? And the more I see people trying this approach, the more positive feedbacks I get. Because people say, well, actually, you know what? I was afraid of going down this path because then I had to deal with JavaScript and C#. But guess what? That's how my team works today in web development. They do C#, they do JavaScript, and they deal with it. Why is it so new now? It's not, right? So it's an interesting architecture to consider. XAML or JavaScript? If your application is going to render HTML, a lot of it, like my news reader, SharePoint application, anything that downloads HTML, shows a lot of HTML, be careful. Because in XAML, the only option we have is the web viewer. And the web viewer sets a lot of constraints for you. There are only so many things you can do with that. That's just a window that loads HTML. But if your entire application is HTML, now you're just getting more HTML input in it. Performance is likely going to be better, much better. Especially in low-spec machines. People ask me, oh, but JavaScript is so much slower than C#. No, it's not. Well, not anymore, right? They are actually getting very close to each other. There are things C# is still faster. There are things where JavaScript actually is faster. But when you compare XAML to HTML, well, my experience especially in low-spec machines, has been that HTML is better, right? Not so much in Windows Phone, at least not yet, especially in Windows Phone 8. But when you're talking about Windows 8, it tends to be better. It's more lightweight, right? So consider that. Be careful to not make assumptions. If you need to do a lot of multi-thread, C# tends to be better. You want to create reusable libraries between Windows 8 and Windows Phone, C# is probably going to be better, right? You want to do unit test, it's easier to do unit test on C# today with the current set of tools we have. Unit testing JavaScript is still not a very good story, in my opinion. We need to make it better. It's not right there yet. So, I guess from all these things, the main red alert for me to you might be really going down the wrong path is if your application is all about HTML and you try to build in XAML because you're more comfortable with it, right? Being comfortable is not necessarily the only decision point now, right? And just look at Facebook. I don't know if you've been following the news. They built an app that was mostly around HTML and JavaScript. Now they're rebuilding them in what? C++ to make most of the performance. Right? Because C++ is still much faster than JavaScript or C#. Right? So if you really want to take most of it, maybe C++ is your choice. So what I want to make clear here is there is no single best option for everything. And I've seen blogs where people state clearly, right? Oh, there's no reason why choosing Java, JavaScript, or HTML. Stay with C# and XAML. I can only infer, well, that person still needs to do a little bit more development there to realize their things are just don't work, right? And there are better options in each case. So this is another very, very, very important point. Your customer hires you to build a Windows 8 app, or your manager says, I want you to build this Windows 8 app. Maybe your customer or your manager, they don't know much about Windows 8. They just read around that this app store is growing up and Windows 8 is selling, so maybe you can monetize this or whatever. They don't really know the principles, the constraints, and everything else. Make sure you communicate this to them. Because otherwise, they will push you to do their view of what a Windows 8 app is. And there is a chance their view is very close to what a Windows 7 app is, right? Or a Windows Forms is, or whatever, Silverlight is. And now you have to constantly spend energy with your customer, your stakeholder, your manager, because they'll keep pushing you to build certain things. And you know, well, that's not really how we do things here. Here is different, right? So it's much better, and I've seen cases where results are pretty sad, right? Where you end up with either an app that doesn't look right, or you spend a lot of effort redoing things, when all of that could be really mitigated if you had a very good conversation initially, where you show a few examples, you talk about a few principles, you explain the whole point of making things simple, or investing more time in design. So you set expectations right, so they know, okay, that's not the same. Okay, I get it. Yeah, now it's easier for me to actually explain what I want and understand what you can do. Don't trust the client code. So I was going to show this in the last presentation. I didn't have time, so I think I can do this now. Just quickly. So there are tools you can use to actually, for example, there is this. This is not even an obfuscation tool. It's more like a compression tool. YUI, it's publicly available. You can install it and play with it. But basically what it does, it's probably going to break because this is broken. So let me take this out. And I can call it, and it runs, does a few things. And then it turns my JavaScript into this, right? It abbreviates variables and takes a lot of stuff away, right? And definitely makes it harder to read your JavaScript. Does it protect it? No. So would you be safer with C#? No. Right? I always could decompile your C#. Oh, but in C# I can obfuscate. Big deal. Right? I can read that. I can figure it out. Right? I can debug it. I can decompile it. Right? I can figure out which web services your application is calling and call them and send parameters that I want. I can put a sniffer there. Right? So don't trust the client ever, 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 ever. Right? If you have very sensitive information, leave it on the server. That's the only 100% sure, guaranteed way you can protect it. Anything else is exposed. So really remember about that, especially applications where this is critical. Be careful here. Where am I? Lost my cursor again. Oh, here I am. So careful with Windows runtime library types. So this is the library you can reuse across different languages. Just to show a little example, if I go to Visual Studio and say I want to create a new library, and say new project, C#, and no, that's not what I wanted. I wanted, it's almost the same thing, but not exactly the same thing. So Windows Store, Windows Runtime Component. Now I will create, for example, I will remove the sealed class, right? And I'll have a public date time test, right? I'll try to, well, return something, right? Return date time dot now. That's okay. So if I try to build this, it says, hey, nah, you cannot do this, right? First, the date time has to be date time offset, because that's what other languages can understand. And you cannot create a class that's not sealed, because other languages may not be able to inherit it. So it has to be, right? Then what do? You create another library. I can create another library and say, well, this one is going to be a class library. No. I just want to add it. Add a new one. And it's a class library. Now, this one allows this, right? And this one allows, and I can actually, from my Windows Runtime Component, reference my class library. So solution, class library. This is okay, because those data types are not exposed to whoever calls the Windows Runtime Component. So that's fine. So that's why, in my mind, the Windows Runtime Component is your little wrapper, is your interop layer, your proxy, right? To between two different words, between JavaScript and C++, or JavaScript and C#, and so on, because it allows you to do those translations between them, right? So that's it helps a lot with this whole process of dealing with different languages. So careful with those data types. It can be a bit of a problem. Understand the constraints. So I was talking a lot about this before. Before you even start building a Windows 8 app, make sure all the scenarios you have in your mind are allowed in the Windows 8 environment. People make a lot of assumptions of what it can or cannot be done. And usually that's a funny thing, right? The less I know, the better, because more comfortable I am making assumptions. That should be fine, right? And then you start building it and spend 3 months on it, and then you hit a huge roadblock, and oh no, that's actually not supported, not allowed. Oh, I should have checked that before. And that gets more interesting when you're building internal apps. I'll talk about this later on, but it can get very interesting. Windows Runtime Component Library, this library just created. Don't touch the user interface. You can, right? From the Windows Runtime Component Library, you can do UI things, right? But guess what? The Windows Runtime Component Library could be running even if your application is not running. It could be a background task, right? So in that case, if you say, well, but in order to run this, I need to show a pop-up. Which pop-up? It's a background task. The user has locked his computer, right? Nothing's going to happen. It's going to break. So good practice, separate things. UI is UI, library is library. Right? Don't mix those roles, because you're going to have lots of problems. And it's really hard to debug these things, right? Background tasks, they're more difficult to debug. And there are lots of combinations of scenarios that could be happening. Maybe your application is running, maybe your application is not running. It's difficult to control. Web services. I believe, personal opinion, that's me, that we are moving away from SOAP and WSDL. And I think almost everybody I talk to says, yeah, we're looking at RESTful services, we're looking at JSON, we're looking at OData. We are not looking at WCF's classic with SOAP and WSDL. In Windows 8, WCF support for SOAP has been trimmed down. Lots of those WS star standards are not supported there anymore for Windows 8 apps. And I think that's kind of a signal that the product team is giving us, saying, you know what, for Windows 8 apps, for mobile apps, it kind of doesn't make so much sense anymore to build SOAP protocols, because they're heavy, right? Mobile device, 3G network, JSON is what, 1/3 of the size of SOAP, at least. You can compress it even further. So much better for mobile networks. Second, it's easier to change, right? RESTful and JSON is so much easier to change. When you look at SOAP and WSDL, everything requires changing the schema and doing a lot of, then you have to update your proxies and everything, then you have to version everything. It's so much harder to deal with this. Look at Facebook, right? You go to Facebook, you register your app, it gives you, gives the developer the control to say, I will enable the breaking changes from December 2012 on my app. I can enable, disable things dynamically. All RESTful based, all very flexible. And then you have OData, and OData is even more interesting because you can basically query, right? It's, you can build a query in a HTTP request. Facebook has another interesting approach. They have this FQL, Facebook Query Language. So you pretty much write a SQL language in a web service request. So instead of actually writing formal signatures for web services that only work for one scenario, why not just make it flexible? And it works for whatever scenario we have today and in the future. Then the problem, of course, is security, right? Because if you build a generic web service that allows querying anything for anything, how do you secure it? So then you have to apply some basic authorization principles to make sure no one gets more or less data than you're allowed to. Bring your own devices. Windows RT is not domain joined. People assume lots of things. So they start building an application on the little desktop that's domain joined with a user account doing Windows integrated authentication. Should work, right? Guess what? In Windows RT, it won't work. So how are you authenticating against those machines? And what about, well, I lose my machine. How are you storing private data on that machine? Are you encrypting it? Are you, what are you doing? Right? So there are a few things you have to consider there. Now this is becoming more and more common. Make your website work first. Does it work with touch? No. So maybe that's where you should be looking at first. I mentioned this before. Invest time in looking at how the look and feel is on a tablet, on a cell phone, because there's a lot of work to be done in that space. Internal app store versus external app store. We will have a story for internally published apps that don't go to the external app store. Then the question is, do you have to comply with the external app store rules? And most people say, no, of course not. Right? It's an internal app. So what? So your company has policies in place, right? Security policies. Are you going to just ignore them? Right? I've seen this happen even internally at Microsoft. Some guys building their little hobby kind of applications at the weekend and want to distribute a bunch of people. Are you dealing with the private sensitive data? Are you encrypting it? Are you connecting to an external web service and do whatever you want? So my recommendation here is, unless you have a very good business justification, apply all the external app store rules plus your internal rules on top of them. Because there's no business justification to just ignore the external app store rules, because they all have a good reason to be there, just because you don't like them. Right? Because the developers say, well, it's more work for me. Well, yeah, right? Those are policies, okay? I will finish on this slide. Consumerization. This is changing a lot of things, right? This is changing how we build applications. We don't use user manuals anymore. Applications are supposed to be self-discoverable. If I cannot just run your app and figure out how to do things, I won't use it. In the good old times, you had those 100 pages manuals, like people would, nobody ever read it, but you would assume people would read them. Right? Today, that doesn't help. People assume you have to figure out things on the fly. You have to deal with discoverability. You have to deal with intuitive UI. So this is changing a lot of how we're working it. And right now I'm working on this initiative called Bring Your Own Apps. Why not allowing anyone in your organization to build apps that connect to your services? Oh, that's a security breach. Why? Facebook has 9 million apps connected to their services. Is that a security breach? Oh, but Facebook is different. Why? They have personal data. They have my data there, right? So can't we build services that are flexible, discoverable, easy to consume, that anyone can use them? Maybe we can, right? So I'll finish here. I think I'm over time already. No? Almost. So thank you very much. I think that's my last presentation. I will be around if you have any questions. Other than that, you have my email. I'll put here again my email for you guys. And if you have any more questions, just send me an email. I have a few questions that I couldn't answer right now, so I'll do some research and find out. And that's it. Thank you.